Welcome to the Ideas Lab Predictor podcast from the University of Birmingham. In each edition, we hear from an expert in a different field who gives us insider information on key trends, upcoming events, and what they think the near future holds.
Today, I'm with Dr. Phil Cox, who is lecturer in food microstructural engineering. And I'm very excited because it's all about food, one of my favourite subjects. So Phil, tell me what you do.
Okay, in our research group, we design novel foods, novel food structures, to try and combat a variety of food-related problems. Primarily amongst that, it's trying to combat obesity through high fat, and particularly indulgent foods such as ice cream and chocolate. But also we look at reducing salt, saturated fat, and just the energy density of food to try and help reduce the impact of obesity that the world is suffering at the moment.
So one of the foods you've been looking at is chocolate. Is it possible to make chocolate that tastes like normal chocolate but isn't quite as bad for you?
If you'd asked the question 3 years ago, the answer would have been no. But over the last 3 years here at Birmingham, we've developed a method in which we can put up to 40% of water into chocolate so that you can't feel it, taste it, it doesn't cause the chocolate to bloom, it doesn't affect the meltdown in the mouth, it doesn't affect the flavour. It looks, feels, tastes and acts just like chocolate, but has a significantly reduced fat content and therefore energy content as well.
That sounds like the holy grail for many, many people. How on earth did this get started?
There were two reasons for starting the research. The main aim was not, in fact, engineering our foods. It was the psychology of food consumption. We're one of the only engineering departments in the country, if not the world, that has psychologists on the staff. And what we were interested in was the perception and psychological drivers behind eating very high-fat, indulgent products, such as chocolate, and whether we could address ways, means, educational approaches to try and move people onto an equally good and equally satisfying product, but just had lower fat. So the project was split into two halves. The first half was creating a truly low-fat chocolate, which had the same sensory attributes as the full-fat original. But that was then used as a test vehicle to look at people's expectations, desires, perception of what low-fat but indulgent products could, should, or weren't when presented with them.
And another area of your work has been around the energy that's required to produce the foods that we all buy and how that can be reduced. It's not something that not something that I've really thought about when I go shopping, how much energy it takes to produce, say, a jar of mayonnaise.
Oh, absolutely. Food manufacture is an enormous business. You look at a jar of mayonnaise on the shelf in the supermarket, but that has been produced at something like the rate of 2 tons per hour in a factory. To produce such a fine dispersion of oil and water is an energetically very intensive process. Work which my colleague Dr. Spiropoulos has done has been looking at mechanisms to give a better way to produce emulsified foods such as mayonnaises, dressings, and some of the mechanisms we use for hiding salt, etc., but to do it in a much, much more energy efficient way so that you can cut down the amount of kilowatt hours taken to just produce the food. And this is regardless of how much energy you use to transport it, chill it, distribute it, and all the rest of it. Just to physically produce the food in a way that A, you get a better product through this new mechanism, and B, you can really start doing away with the very large energy hungry machines that are traditionally used to produce what are very, very commonplace and high volume foods.
Because we're all kind of aware of food miles in terms of transporting food, but don't really think about the energy it takes to make a food or the energy it takes for a supermarket to keep a food on its shelves between the time that it arrives there and you take it home.
Absolutely. The energy story for food manufacture and distribution is a very complex one. Trying to distribute frozen or chilled foods over great distances is a very, very energy intensive process. Storage of chilled and frozen foods in a convenient fashion supermarket is an area of intense research at the moment, trying to work out the most efficient way to let the consumer still have their choice and select the product they want, but not to waste huge, huge amounts of energy just into the atmosphere to keep it cold. Colleagues of ours in Chipping Campden have been running a very big project on this. It's estimated one of the biggest sources of energy wastage in food manufacturing and distribution are the large refrigerators in supermarkets. You have to have these things keeping the food chilled and therefore safe and palatable and give it a storage life so you don't have to throw it away so quickly. But also you have to make it accessible for people to reach in, take what they want, to make their decisions. It's a very delicate balance, which a lot of people are looking into quite intensively.
You mentioned salt as well, and I think most people are aware of the government drive to get us to eat less salt. But how does that work in terms of food manufacture?
Food manufacture and salt is a very difficult story. Salt gives many foods a very pleasant flavour. If you sprinkle salt onto your chips, they taste much, much better. Unfortunately, a whole history of reducing preservatives, making more natural, fresher food has meant that a variety of chemicals that were used traditionally have been dropped out of the marketplace. And now salt remains really quite a strong preservative of food as well as a flavouring aid. The problem is that it has a very, very bad effect upon blood pressure, hypertension, etc., etc. And most of the salt that you eat, you don't have any control over. If you sprinkle salt on your chips, you know how much you put on, even if you put a lot, a little, or just the right amount. But a lot of processed food, so that it can be sold, it can be stored, it can be shipped, it can be held in supermarkets, may contain significant amounts of salt. So one of the approaches that we've been taking is trying to reduce the salt in processed foods, but keeping the familiar taste that people like and are familiar with. Well, the original target was 80% reduction in the amount of salt. When first presented with the project, I thought 8 would have been a better target, but 80 was the government figure. And we're getting there. We're actually doing this. We're using very, very subtle mechanisms to hide the salt away into certain places so you only taste it on consumption whilst you're chewing the food. We're looking at ways to make salt stick to the taste buds more efficiently so you can use less salt to give you the same flavour sensation for a much greater amount that you'd normally receive.
So gazing ahead over the next 18 months or 2 years or so, what's the future of food? What's going to be in store for the consumer?
Here at Birmingham, we're trying to deliver a range of foodstuffs which are reduced in terms of fats and saturated fat, but have the same sensory, flavour, textural properties as the full-fat original. So we can take away some of the fat, reduce the saturated fat, but still give products which people want to eat. So they recognise the product as being as good as the full-fat original, but are not as bad for them, and will give them a reduced fat intake, but not at the expense of enjoyment or indulgence of the high-fat originals.
So is it possible within a couple of years we will be seeing products like mayonnaise or even chocolate, that the diet versions or the low-fat versions really, really are as good as the full-fat versions?
I do hope so. Here in the School of Chemical Engineering, we are currently patenting a great number of our research themes, and we have a significant amount of industrial interest because there is such a need and a desire from the food industry to try and reduce the rates of obesity worldwide. We are getting an industrial pull for our research as opposed to just the academic push.
Dr. Phil Cox, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This podcast and others in the series are available on the Ideas Lab website, www.ideaslabuk.com. On the website, you can find out how to email us with comments, questions, or suggestions for future topics for the podcast. There's also information on the free support Ideas Lab has to offer to TV and radio producers, new media producers, and journalists. The interviewer for the Ideas Lab Predictor podcast was Lucy Vernal, and the producer was Andy Tootell.